Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and other forms of media. My name is Dan Morin, and I have with me this week the rest of my vigilante support squad. John Moltz is here.
I'm the hero this podcast needs.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad we have someone, because I was not filling that niche, that's for sure. Guy English is also here. Hello, Guy.
I am the knight.
I've got the knight. I've got the hero this podcast needs. Well, we're pretty much all set then.
You need a sassy sidekick now.
Oh, we do need a sassy sidekick. I don't have one on tap today. I was not prepared for this. Maybe not get the memo. Maybe next week we can have a sassy sidekick. All right. So normally this is a show where we talk about some of the TV shows that we follow more regularly. We've been covering Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We will be covering the upcoming season of Arrow. But this week we thought we'd take a little detour to talk about the pilot for the newest addition to the CW superhero roster, and that is Batwoman. So we are going to go over the first episode of Batwoman, which premiered this week. If you do not want to be spoiled on it, this is your warning, because we're going to discuss the whole thing. So spoilers will be all over the place. So you can feel free to skip ahead to our superhero sweep segment if you would like to avoid that. Otherwise, we're going to dive right in with a recap of Batwoman Season 1, Episode 1, entitled Pilot. Where did they come up with these titles? It's just so...
Who knows?
So original.
There aren't any pilots in this episode.
That's true. It's pilotless. I'm going to do a quick recap about this because my notes are somewhat sparse, and then we'll just discuss the overall this episode, where it sets up the series, how we feel about it, etc. So we basically open with a flashback, which we learn is Kate Kane, our heroine, as a kid. She's in a car accident with her mother and her sister, and Batman saves her, but her mother and her sister die. We are basically then catapulted 3 years into the future, or 3 years from the present day. Hold on. Let me try that again. We are basically then catapulted into the present day. 3 years prior, Batman disappeared, and now Gotham City is like, well, we're going to turn off the bat signal. The city seems to be mainly under the purview of this security firm known as the Crows. They're setting up security at this fancy event where they're turning off the bat signal. And the a gang of masked criminals looking kind of like Alice in Wonderland themed kidnaps one of the agents of the security firm, who we are then find out is the ex-girlfriend of our heroine, Kate.
That brings us to our sponsor this week.
Oh, which okay. Is, hit me.
It is the triple bat signal. If you typically only use one bat light to light up the bat sky... In Batwoman, you get three of them. Three spotlights create the bat signal. And I thought that was a cool touch.
That's smart. It's smart when you think about it.
It's interesting. It's a twist.
Kate is training somewhere in the Arctic to like swim under frozen water. Seems a little weird, but okay. She returns. Basically gets a call from her stepsister about her ex-girlfriend, Sophie, being kidnapped, and decides to go back. We have her meet up with her dad, who is the head of the Crows, and we sort of get the idea that there's some tension there, and that she left because she wanted to join up with the Crows, and he made her go do all this training. But she still wants to kind of, she's a rebel, she's gonna do things her own way. So even though she's told to stay out of Sophie's disappearance, she basically breaks into Wayne Enterprises to use their security system, and she meets Luke Fox, who we are, I think, to presume is the son of Lucius Fox, who is basically the only guy working there.
It feels like Bruce tried to do him a favor, but ultimately it's just a dead end job that's just stuck with
you're
no
the
friends.
Custodian of Wayne Enterprise.
Yeah, it's like, that's not.
Yeah, what's the path upward there?
Right.
I mean, arguably, it's all upward.
I guess so.
So analyzing security footage, Kate turns up a creepy paddle that is linked to an orphanage, which she decides to investigate. Fight, and she finds herself smacked on the head and confronted by our villain Alice, who is a not quite Joker analog, but like, you know, an Alice in Wonderland but sort of psychotic.
I was happy with her being it evokes the Joker without actually being the same thing. It's a bit more, well, obviously Mad Hatter-ish.
Mad Hatter, right. Yeah.
Joker-ish.
But yeah. I thought, isn't that, wasn't that his sister's name?
Whose sister?
Alice? Oh, Alice Teach. Yeah. Tretch, whatever Alice it was.
Yes, yeah, yeah. In Gotham, at right. least, for sure. I don't remember if that was canon enough places. I believe this is an existing DC character and Batwoman villain.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, by the end, I really thought, I thought maybe they'd, I don't know enough about Batwoman, but by the end, it was like, oh, this is a little bit of a neatly tight bow on this, but anyway.
Right. Yeah. So we get during this little scene where Alice is interrogating Kate, that this vendetta Alice has is not against the city, but is against actually Kate's father, the head of the Crows, for reasons we're not quite sure of at that point. Kate is basically dumped unceremoniously, and she is found by someone who drags her to a clinic, which turns out to be run by her stepsister, who we might previously have thought was sort of a shallow, vapid sort, but is actually turns out to be a med student who's been basically pilfering things from her med school in order to treat people who have no place else to go, which I thought was a nice little bit of depth for that character. Not the direction I expected them to go, and made me like that character a lot more.
Yeah, give her some utility too, rather than just being a vacuous sidekick.
Right.
Exactly. Also, it underscores that Gotham remains a very bifurcated, have and have not sort of society, right?
Right. We get the impression that it's much worse than it even was in the past. So
good job, Bruce.
Yeah. Kate goes back to Wayne Enterprises and basically finds the Batcave and discovers that Bruce, her cousin, was Batman. She also discovers that Bruce felt like intense guilt over the fact that he couldn't save Kate's sister and mother, and kept replaying the scenario and didn't know why it failed, and sort of beat himself up by that, which sounds very Bruce Wayne-ish.
Turns out it's Detroit's fault.
Yeah. It always is.
Yeah. No, Detroit, we love you. Come back.
Oh man, big three won't be sponsoring us. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if
Detroit our second sponsor?
I don't know if you've seen the mailing list and the area code for all of the fax numbers that we that we have on file. Uh-huh. They're all Detroit area codes. So
So Kate decides to take up the mantle of Batwoman and has Luke adapt the suit. And then she shows up to where Alice is holding Sophie hostage and has basically given Kate's father a sort of, Sophie's choice of you can save Sophie or you can have everybody at the really paltrily attended movie night exploded by a bomb. It also turns out Alice has at least two of the Crows working for her. Kate shows up as Batwoman and basically beats up Alice to a standstill, then saves Sophie from falling off the building. And everything's great. Except when Kate goes back to the Crows and her father's like, yeah, you can totally join the team if you want. I just didn't want to lose you. She turns it down and then she gets to chat with Sophie, who it turns out is married now to a dude. yeah. And then in the end, we get the idea that this is all the voiceover that has been accompanying the whole thing is actually a letter that Kate is writing to Bruce explaining her story. And we get her puzzled a little bit as she looks at the knife that she took from Alice threw at her during the crime scene and realizes there's a gem embedded in it, which is the same gem that was in her sister's necklace when she disappeared. To which point we cut to Alice looking at the photo that Kate's sister was taking of both of them in the opening scene and suggesting, of course, that Alice is actually her sister whose body was never found. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun.
So, Alice knows who Batwoman is, right? Alice knows that was Kate?
I don't think necessarily.
Then why is she throwing away her sacred ruby thing?
I don't know. I mean, it seemed like she had a lot of knives. I don't know why she decided to throw that one or put it in a knife.
Maybe they all have a gem.
That's true. That could be. Yeah. Maybe that's her symbol.
Maybe. Anyway, that bit seemed a little weird.
Anyways,
she throws the knife because she has to throw the knife for the plot.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Right.
Okay. I had that moment. Yeah. The very first scene when Alice is interrogating Kate in that, after she's been captured, and she says something about like, oh, you were supposed to be gone or something like that. Immediately my note says, it says like, is Alice her sister?
Yeah.
Immediately. Just immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got it fairly early on too.
Very telegraphed, I thought.
Right.
That's fine.
It was not a big surprise.
That's fine.
Mostly just because they set up, you know, I mean, they replay that scene over and over again.
Several
and then,
times.
And then here comes this mysterious woman. Oh, who's she?
Like, oh, right. Okay. Right. So, I mean, like, right. It's one of those things
where economy of characters.
If they had left it to the end of the season, I think it would have been really, really bad, right? Like, everyone would have been like, yeah.
Yeah.
We knew this. But
I read a review that said it was a complete misfire to do it at the end of the pilot, but I don't think it's worth carrying that long.
It's more interesting to have the dynamic of trying to sort of figure that out, I think.
I suppose so. Like, we as the audience now know what's up, but, well, at least Kate doesn't, although Alice does. So that's going to make for some interesting messing with potential. Like you guys are saying, I just don't think there is a lot of value in stringing out the bad guy being, or the bad woman being, the sister. Like, I felt it was a little too tight with a nice little bow on it. If you're going to do that, at least just get it over with so we can see the repercussions and deal with that a bit more than like the whodunit, who is it kind of factor.
Yeah.
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 I think,
like we had with what, Prometheus in season 7, 6 of Arrow, something like that.
Yeah, you
know, like
not my favorite.
I know that's not John's favorite. I like that one, but I think that's because they did a nice job with the mystery.
Well, guess what, Dan? He's coming back.
I know. I'm excited. He's 10 steps ahead of us, John.
Yeah,
he's 10 episodes ahead of us.
Yeah,
I will say
he's just got the script ahead of time. That's all.
my overall feeling on this episode was I felt like the pacing was weird. It's fast. It feels like there's a lot that needs to get done. And that to me felt very rushed in some of the scenes. I really like a lot of the ingredients here. Like, I think Ruby Rose is really good. I really enjoy her performance. I think that actually Rachel Skarsten as Alice, also really good. I like her whole vibe. Almost everybody else, aside from, I do like the stepsister, but I feel like the rest of the characters don't get any time, so it's hard to like have any conception of them.
Yeah, there's a little bit of cookie cutter going on, and also it doesn't feel like any of the actors have found the characters yet.
Yes.
Yeah. Even in Ruby Rose's,
I feel like they're not given enough to work with, though. I mean, I think there's not enough in the script for them to really flesh it out. And I feel the same way about Alice. Like, she seems, I mean, she's playing like a, you know, good manic type, but it's not really, it's not landing super hard because she's, I mean, the stuff that she's doing is just so bland, villainous.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm going to blow up these people
it's
watching
a trope.
The movie that Batman watched, you know, before he became Batman.
Right.
That also didn't seem...
Well, I liked the Easter egg that it was Zorro. That was fine. I thought that the fact that... I love that they're like, this movie night is a huge success. I'm like, dude, there's 20 people.
Yeah, right. There's like 40... My note is there's 14 people watching a movie and 28 police watching the people watching the movie.
That felt like there was like a little bit of a production. I think that was also the similar... That's also a problem with the CW show's production, is if you stack this up against, say, Gotham, when they shot Gotham, like, the city felt much more expansive and much more of a character. This feels like kind of like every other city in a CW show, and that's kind of a bummer.
Right.
I felt early seasons of Arrow had a more fleshed out feeling city.
Yeah, yeah,
I think
I agree.
They had more.
At least they had him running around in daylight in Vancouver.
Right.
Like it felt like he was mobile. Like he could actually get around the city or drive his motorbike. Or remember that like one in season 1 where he's just running through the streets trying to capture a motorcycle guy who shot at his mom, kind of thing.
Yep.
Like that was that kind of stuff was awesome. This felt constrained. A lot of sets, like a lot of sort of
set pieces. And not very well. like pretty bland set.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
Other but again, than, it could other just than, be you know the office. Other than Bruce Wayne's office, everything else is really minimal.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Do you mean the office or the Batcave?
I thought the office was like, I mean, there were a lot of stuff in the office at least.
Yes.
Yeah. And it seems like, okay, that's a set they're going to use a lot.
Yeah. The Batcave or Batcave B, I guess.
I assume it's these alternate Batcave because the real one's Underway Manor, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I would guess so. I like the look of it. It was cool.
Yeah.
I like the look of the suit. This is the first time we've seen Batman on screen in TV, I guess.
The suit's not bad. I think it's, we've already seen the Batwoman suit in the Elseworlds crossover last year. And right. I think Batwoman suit is way
adjusted.
Is way better than the suit that we see in the opening scene here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm okay with that because it's like, you know, it could be his B suit, you know, and it's only going to be seen for a short period of time. So,
right. I thought the head looked weird to me. It was
the head looked definitely 100% looked weird, especially on her body. Her body's slighter than, well, obviously like a 6 foot pumped up guy.
Yeah.
She's got quite a slight frame actually.
Right. Yeah. I thought that the scene there was really nice. Now she has, I believe she has a martial arts background or a fighting background of some variety. I'd have to double check that. But I thought the scene that she has the fight with all the guys breaking into the orphanage was actually pretty good.
Yep. Yeah, some of the fights were good. I think that's the part that I enjoyed the most of this episode was her being Batwoman.
Yeah. Batwoman or Batwoman just in regular clothes, like the beaten up stuff.
I like that part too. So I guess, yeah, maybe it's just the fight scenes I like.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing. I like that she wasn't just wiping the floor with everybody. I mean, she's clearly amazing, but you know, if she gets bonked on the head, that hurts. So.
Well, and I like the fact that the fighting that she did felt appropriate to. So, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people and heard a bunch of people speak about like, all right, you're a woman, especially fighting, you know, dudes who are generally much bigger, right? And like have a lot more mass than you. And so as a result, your style and tactics have to change, right? You can't just slug it out with someone who is a foot taller than you and weighs like 100 pounds.
100 pounds on you.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. And I think they did a nice job of adapting her fighting style to feel like she has learned to fight in a way that gives her that she uses the advantages she has, right? Like she's smaller, but she's also a lot more mobile. And like I felt like there was a little kineticism to her fighting style that works really well. And that really impressed me. I thought that was like a nice like. It's a certain degree of like, yes, we're a superhero show, but we also have to deal. We're grounded in reality in the sense that we have to spend some time trying to figure out how this person is going to hold their own in this kind of fight.
Right. I sort of like the fight between her and Alice at the end, which was kind of evenly matched and a bit of a like that was kind of dirty fighting.
Yes.
Like it didn't feel like ninjas fight facing off. It was just more like a lot of desperation stuff going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I agree. Let's see, what are the other things I wanted to discuss?
Her romance.
I think that was the thing I was going to throw out next, which is, so this is also the first headlined series by a queer superhero for the CW, right? Like we certainly have Sarah Lance, who is bisexual, and we have other supporting characters who are, LGBTQ. But this is the first time that we've had that as the titular hero of the show. Mm-hmm. And
it's also an inciting relationship as opposed to being sort of something, I guess that's not true. I was going to say on this, like it's a side plot of Legends, but.
Yeah, I don't
know. In Batwoman, like this sets up an initial conflict for the show that is going to go forward, basically. So. We skipped this part of the recap, but she had a relationship in military academy.
Yeah, I think that's what they said.
Some kind of military academy with Sophie. That was forbidden at the time, and they are asked to both sign documents disavowing that they are gay. I suppose I forget what the exact word.
I think they say homosexual activity essentially. Yeah,
homosexual activities. Yeah, it gets back to like real McCarthy era. Well,
yeah.
Man, well, if only it was that long ago.
Right.
Goes back to like Clinton era, don't ask, don't tell. If like, and if only it was that long ago. Goes back to like 3 weeks ago in certain places. And there's a Supreme Court case in front of the court today about getting fired for being
right.
And so I think none of us need to say that guess whose side we're on that. So, RBG, if you're listening, guess what?
We're on Batwoman's side.
We're on Batwoman's side, yeah. I know all the Supreme Justices actually read our show. So.
That's true. Yeah. Avid readers.
Well, they all dress up in costumes anyway, so that's why they're big fans. But yeah, so the inciting incident Sophie signs a document disavowing her behavior while our hero Kate Kane does not, and that breaks him up, sort of casting Kate out into the world outside of the structure that she'd sort of seen herself in, because she wanted to become a Krill, which is sort of a mercenary under her dad's army, private army, whereas Sophie follows along that path, and that's basically where we find Kate stuck under the ice, I don't know, doing basically Bruce Wayne style self-training.
Right.
And then later on, at the end of the episode, after she's gone out of her way to try to save Sophie, we discover that Sophie's now married to a man. So that feels, that's interesting. It's certainly not something we've seen done on a show like this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like it. It makes sense. It seems... it did not feel like a relationship that was there to titillate young male viewers.
Right.
And it felt like a difficult relationship that I think it will lead to stories and plots or emotional beats that are atypical for what we've seen previously on these kind of shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sarah doesn't ever really have to, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's been an instance, but there are not many instances at the very least where she has to face any sort of bigotry.
No, very little. I can't think of any offhand.
It's played, yeah. It's nice to have these things as well, because yes. It's like it's played as completely normal and there shouldn't be any bigotry.
Right.
Yes.
It's aspirational.
Right.
Yes. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. You should be able to watch that show and identify with Sarah and right. not feel that like, oh, like even the superhero's life is kind of garbage.
Right. Or that's the only kind of story that you can tell is a story where someone is oppressed because of it. Right. Like you want to acknowledge it at some like, but without necessarily making that the only option.
Yeah,
this seems like it's going to be a bit of a different take on it, though.
Yeah, and that's good. Right, there's room for both.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sarah can time travel back to whatever and like like get it on with like the Duchess or something. Right. Like
Joan of Arc or whoever.
Joan of Arc, whoever she wants to have a fling with. That's awesome. That's fun. This seems to be a bit more like dealing with sort of social pressures.
Yeah. That jerks.
At least cultural jerks. Thank you. Better way of saying it.
Yeah, I think that will be interesting. I'm curious to see how they develop that. It's always instructive to look at how things change from, say, the pilot to the second episode often as well, because sometimes they realize things that they set up in the first episode, they don't want to go in that direction, or they want to play up something else, or, you know, what do people respond to? So I'm very curious to see the second episode and see how they sort of transmute from the pilot to what is our ongoing plot look like? What do our week-to-week plots look like? How are we developing these characters? Let's sort of, you know, give a chance our side characters to grow into their own. All of those things, I think, are interesting questions. Like, I will say, I didn't think this was necessarily the strongest of a CW superhero pilots. But that said, I'm still interested in seeing where it goes, and I will keep watching it because I think, in general, the shows, what's good about these shows is they haven't needed to rely on the strength of a pilot for the most part, right? Like, because of having a built-in audience and because of the fact that we're talking about the kind of stories that build over the course of, say, a season, I feel like they've been lucky and able to be like, you know what, we're not going to have to pin all of our hopes on the pilot. So we'll see how that goes, but I feel bullish on it.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, just to double back for one last point. I'm very curious, and I'm going to try to find and read as much commentary on this pilot from a queer perspective as I can, because I think that's it should be said that, I mean, we're three sort of boring white guys in cis and straight, and pretty much we eat white bread for breakfast, and that's about it.
True.
So it was an everything bagel, but that's pretty close.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's your stepping out on the wild side. You got the everything bagel. Yeah. No, but like, in some ways, I don't think we're necessarily qualified to speak to the veracity of this sort of relationship. So I'm eager to sort of learn more from that perspective. What, where I wholeheartedly agree with you, Dan, is that, like, I think some of the pieces on the board here are good. I don't think that this stands up as a pilot compared to some of the other ones. Certainly I think the Arrow pilot was better.
Well, they had a lot more, they didn't have the built-in like audience, and they had a lot more riding on that pilot, I think, than a lot of the subsequent ones.
Yeah. I guess so, but just because you've got a built-in audience doesn't mean you should phone it in.
No, like, no, I agree. I'm not defending that.
Not that they phoned it in. Yeah. But I mean, let me be clear. I don't think they phoned it in, but I mean, like,
there's definitely a higher degree of difficulty on the Arrow pilot. And I think the Flash pilot is really good as well. That's a solid, really solid thing. I mean, Legends, no.
It's better than Legends.
Although Black Lightning was pretty good.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Black Lightning was better. I think it was better than this one.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that as well.
Yeah,
yeah, but I think it'll improve. So again, I think some of the voiceover. If the voiceover had been, I don't know, something else,
someone else.
Someone else. I think it needed a little bit more oomph, but I just don't think the character's been found yet. Maybe because they just don't have when they recorded it, they just didn't have enough to work with yet to sort of nail it. But we'll see. We'll get there. I'm going to keep watching them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree as well.
So the Alice character is in the comic books and is her sister in the comic books. So to me, it doesn't make any sense. Why bother dragging that out?
I agree. Out? I think that's smart. I think. You want to, that's the trick of everything where things are so Googleable now. And I mean, and that was one of the reasons I really liked, and I to throw myself against John, the Prometheus reveal was that they deliberately dangled Adrian Chase as Vigilante, who is his comic book identity, so as to throw off all the people who will Google them and be like, oh, it's clearly just this guy is Vigilante, right? Like, I thought showed an awareness of like, we're making a show in this day and age where people can look up basically anything. So, you know, you got to be careful about how you pitch stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
What I'm not sure about, which I was just trying to look up, was what the season order is for Batwoman. I'm not sure how many episodes this is, which is an interesting question because I think it plays into the Crisis crossover, which suggests it's running at least through the end of the year. So I mean, I don't know if this is a 13 episode order or a 26 episode order.
It's supposed to be contemporary with what's going on in like Star City.
Yeah. Well, the challenge with that is, of course, we already saw the Elseworlds crossover in which she's
established,
but there's a whole parallel universe monitor screwing with things aspect there. So you could kind of hand wave it if you needed to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I assume it's supposed to be contemporaneous. I don't expect us to see any other direct crossover. But I wouldn't be surprised if they had mentions of like, oh, in Star City, the Green Arrow did blah, 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 or whatever.
Right.
And I don't know if this is the case. So at the very end of this episode, we also hear a different voiceover from a character who is called Vesper Fairchild, who I think is also a DC character, who is voiced by Rachel Maddow, which is an interesting choice.
What?
Yeah, you didn't know this? At the very end, you hear like a news anchor talking about Batman coming back. There's like a little bit of a voiceover, and that's Rachel Maddow as Vesper Fairchild. And it mentions in the Wikipedia page, I don't know if this is true, A snarky gossip maven and media personality and former flame of Oliver Queen. Don't know where that established coming from, but that will be very funny if they bring that up at some point.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oliver Queen's had a lot of flames.
That's though, fair. So. It's fair. Yeah. Depends which era we're talking, right? Like, we're talking pre-disappearance? Because totally.
Yeah. I was pretty disappointed by that character who trains her.
Yeah, I agreed with that.
Clearly a guy who has no trouble speaking English, and then like they
gave him an accent.
He's he's dropping words like to make it sound like he doesn't, like he has trouble speaking English.
Yeah, that was a very bizarre choice, and it felt like, why would you do that? Why would you do that in this day and age, especially when you're making a show about somebody who is like in an oppressed minority, right? Like,
why
would you make that decision? So,
yeah,
definite thumbs down on that, which I thought it was very strange.
Weird. Yeah, that's definitely a blind eye to. I mean, I don't know. Were they trying to ape somebody from the comics? I don't know.
Well, I was trying to look that up, and I was trying to see if there's some like thing where she goes up north and gets trained by somebody, but I haven't found it. If it's there.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt very much. I felt like they very much wanted to evoke a Batman Begins aesthetic, but that seemed like a poor choice of ways to do that. So I also kind of expect that character not to reappear.
Yeah, I kind of expect
you think
that
so?
Too.
I don't think that character was. I mean, we didn't even get a name.
Yeah.
So
he's the guy that traps her under the ice every day for weeks until she gets out of it faster.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. That's my ice breaking training guy.
He's Ice Dick.
That's a terrible name.
Yeah, that's
I know, it's terrible. Oh, that's why he's not coming back. Yeah.
That's one of the guys in Top Gun that just, you know, never really went anywhere.
Yeah. Yep. Do you guys have anything else you want to add to that, this overview?
No, I think it made sense.
Okay.
I think we've covered it. Do you want to do a rating? I don't feel like it.
Yeah, I don't think we need to.
I mean, ultimately, John Jr., but only because it's undecided at this point. I don't have a strong opinion either way. And I honestly do hope it does well for a lot of the reasons we outlined. Not does well economically, just finds its stride and starts telling interesting stories.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I will be interested to see where it goes in the rest of the season. They're coming from a place with a lot of goodwill because most of the shows have been good overall.
Yeah.
And that, I agree with you, Guy, about your earlier comment about that doesn't mean you should be allowed to coast. And I think that is one of the dangers of some of the CW shows is... Mm-hmm. You've established an audience. Can you continue telling interesting and compelling stories rather than just being like, well, everyone loves superheroes. We're just going to keep churning them out.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, Batwoman seems like a cool one.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So that character is listed as Kate Kane's trainer in the credits.
You could have had a guy telling her to do push-ups. Why?
You should have had Brad Pitt from Burn After Reading.
Yeah, that's right. Couldn't afford him.
Is that the movie's in?
As the Coen brothers.
And the actor, this is his only acting credit.
That's strange.
He has no other acting credits.
What a weird choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will we'll check back in at some point in one of our superhero sweep segments and just see if we want to discuss how things have been progressing. So give it a few episodes, see how it develops. But speaking of superhero sweep, I think we should jump right over there now. Guy, I think you had a something you wanted to bring up this week.
Oh, did I? Oh, I got to bring this up. I was fired up about it previously, and now I just don't care.
that's the motto of this show.
I can't even...
I went right to not caring.
So Martin Scorsese was complaining, I don't know, last week sometime, that... Not even. It was a mild complaint. He was saying that he hasn't really watched a lot of the Marvel superhero movies, and that he said that they are not cinema. And a lot of people became upset about that. And to them, I say, shut up. Martin Scorsese, the man's a legend. If he doesn't like your movie, who cares? It's fine. He's allowed not to like your movie. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, a lot of these movies are good or fun, but I think it goes back to one of the things that we've sort of recurred on this show, at least, is that there's good and then there's fun. And you can really, really enjoy fun stuff, but that doesn't make it necessarily good. Right. And I think if you look at the work from Scorsese's work, I think it's pretty easy to argue that it's actually just empirically good. This is, again, not to judge art or what is art, but I mean, there is empirically good stuff about the fabrication of or certain forms of art or craft, right? And I think to claim that Scorsese is not at the top of his game in terms of cinema is bananas. And yeah, I mean, maybe your Flying Rocket Raccoon brings a lot of hearts and smile to people, and yeah, maybe there's some emotional moments in there. That's great, but come on, you're not making Goodfellas here. So
yeah,
maybe just stop getting bent out of shape. It's like a tempest in a teapot. Yeah,
we said this before, but it's like cereals. It's like, you know, the old cereals, and turned into they're revealed in their final form because they're instead of being really cheap to make, they're incredibly expensive, and instead of churning one out every week, they, you know, put out three a year and make a bazillion dollars off of them.
I think the end of the day, I mean, people like to argue a lot about what is art, what is not art, what is good, what is not good. I tend to think as a culture, we spend way too much time arguing about this when the answer is like what you want to like and don't worry about what other people like, right? Like, at the end of the day, Martin Scorsese not liking it basically has zero impact. It's not like those you know, Disney's not going to be like, well, shut it down.
Right. Yeah, it just doesn't matter.
It doesn't, and there's no reason to lambast Scorsese. Scorsese's making a different type of movie, and you can argue about which one's better to your heart's content, and guess what? Nobody will ever convince anybody else that they're right.
Yeah, I would love to see Martin Scorsese do a director's commentary or like a commentary track for Endgame, having not watched anything else. I want him to sit down and watch Endgame. And him and like De Niro and Joe Pesci sitting there basically drinking, watching Endgame and trying to understand what the hell is going on. I'd love this? That.
What the fuck's going on here? I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
I did like Samuel Jackson's response to it. Because I thought it was pretty measured, right? Like, you know, he basically says, films are films. Not everybody likes Scorsese stuff either. We do, but not everybody does, right? Like, everyone's got an opinion. Yeah. And it's like, that's true. It's literally true. Everyone has an opinion. Yeah. Not everybody likes Scorsese's work. Not everybody likes superhero movies. It's fine. We are different. Yeah. Embrace your differences and move on.
Right. And you know you can always turn to Samuel L. Jackson for a measured, calm response about anything.
He's very even-keeled. That's what I like about him.
Very, very even-handed kind of guy. Yeah. Anyway, I loved his response. I even really enjoyed what Scorsese had to say, because fine.
I mean, I love theme parks. He compares them to theme parks, and it's like...
Yeah, it's like, yeah, really, that's also cool.
I really enjoy the experience of a theme park, but yeah, it's fine.
It's fine. Stop getting bent out of shape, and just... I don't know. Go watch his new movie, whatever it's called.
The Irishman. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. But I intend to, obviously.
I mean, I am not the biggest Scorsese fan in the world, but, you know, I'm also going to acknowledge that he's a very talented filmmaker. Like, I would not.
Sure.
It's not my, it's not always my cup of tea, but that's fine.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, but
that there's a lot of craft that went into it, and he spends a lot of time serious about what he does.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, it would be like Steve Jobs taking a crap on a Tamagotchi. It's like, yeah, we know, Steve. But does it matter? No. It's on my keychain, and I like it. So.
Right. Exactly.
Was that? That was like a 30-year-old dated reference.
Yeah. So well, Steve Jobs is dead too, so you know. Oof. He would be talking about a Tamagotchi. Oh
God, I'm showing my age.
All right, I had a couple other things that I wanted to mention in passing. One is just the note that so we had heard that Colton Haynes was not a regular on Arrow in the upcoming season, but they have confirmed that he will be back in a recurring role, which is our good friend Roy, which I think we're all glad to hear. We've talked in the past about how much we enjoy his character, and it would have been super weird to do the final season and not include him in some capacity.
Yeah. I mean, it would have had to be enough to him. Like, he took a couple of seasons off. I don't know. I'm never sure if he really enjoys doing the show or not, but I mean, he keeps coming back, so. Well, I don't know. I think I'd read some article somewhere at one point that he just didn't want to do acting anymore.
Yeah.
Or really. Wanted to get out of the modeling thing, or just was not feeling good. In some
he wants
way.
To get, he wants to get into chartered accountancy.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't?
It's, where it's literally where the money is.
Yeah. But I think it would have been weird. I mean, if you don't just have him back for like a couple of scenes at least.
Yeah.
Assuming he wants to do it, obviously. Like, don't twist anybody's arm.
I don't think they're not the they're not characters in a Scorsese film. They're not twisting his arm.
You're in the movie.
That was, so that was welcome news. I also wanted to include, we talked a bit about casting in Crisis last time, and there was a tweet which I sent to you guys from Mark Guggenheim, who is one of the EPs in the Arrowverse, in which somebody tweeted at him saying that they should have Nicolas Cage's Superman in Crisis. Mark Guggenheim replied, "What makes you think we didn't reach out?" Which I love, because I'm sure there's no way they're getting Nicolas Cage. Although, I assume you guys, did you guys read that Nicolas Cage profile? What was it, like a couple months back?
I think so.
It was in
he's
the Times.
Huge Superman fan.
He's a huge Superman fan. B, I mean, he's a huge comic book fan. His name comes from Luke Cage. That's how he.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's why he chose. So his name is Nicholas Coppola, because he's related to the Coppolas. Yeah. And he chose, he loved Luke Cage. He loved comic books. So he took Cage as his screen name.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's like his AIM handle.
Wow. Now that you say that, that explains so much. That explains all of the overtop acting, the larger than life persona that he
also, wow. I mean, just not to make it too, you know, but he also has a kid named Kal-El. So like, let's just roll with
it. I did not know that.
I'm telling you all the Nicolas Cage facts that you need to know.
Well, why don't we put his kid in the thing then?
This is a Nicolas Cage podcast.
Yeah. Anyways, go read. I'll put a link to this in the show notes. There's I believe it's a New York Times profile on Nicolas Cage. I think it was in August, because I remember reading it while I was stuck in an airport for several hours. And it is bananas. it is well worth reading, because, I mean, among other things, you learn about, like, Nicolas Cage has, like, a tomb built for himself in New Orleans for when he dies.
Whoa.
It is bananas. It's good stuff. Good stuff. Anyways.
He's great. He's great in Into the Spider-Verse.
I mean, he's great in many things. There's a reason that Community did an entire episode where the premise was, is Nicolas Cage a genius or a madman? And the answer is, it's hard to figure out. But I would love it if they got him for a 30-second cameo in Crisis, where it's just like him like winking at the camera or something like that, and they paid him like $1 million or whatever. Like, fine,
I know, that's the problem.
If we do a member special, we should do the Rock.
Oh, I don't know how we make that into a superhero. I don't either, but I love that movie so much, unabashedly.
Remember, John, do you like it? I forget if you haven't seen it. I think it's come up before.
I saw it once. I enjoyed watching it, and I feel like I never need to see it ever again.
I've seen it several times. It was the first DVD I ever bought.
Wow. Then again, it has Tony Todd in it. Come on, man.
It does have Tony Todd in it. That's true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then again, I mean, it came out when I was like 17, so you know that really hit me in the sweet spot there. I have a good story. I convinced my dad to take me that movie, which is not at all his type of thing. My dad is a guy who loves classical music and baseball. That was not his movie. It was kind of embarrassing to watch with him.
There's a baseball game in it. Oh no, it's a football game.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. not his thing, even remotely. But anyways, yeah, that's a great idea. We'll think about that when member season rolls around. So let's see. The other thing I had on the list for this week is, oh yes, there was a poster. I believe this is an official poster revealed for the WandaVision series that's coming up.
Yeah.
Which shows Paul Bettany's Vision and Elizabeth Olsen's Scarlet Witch in a very like 1950s looking suburban Pleasantville style thing, which seems to point a finger towards a run by, I want to say, Tom King in the comics a few years back, which was called, I think it's just called Vision or Visions, the Vision.
I think it was just Vision.
Yeah, it's. I did not read all of it because I was not sure that it was my thing, but a lot of people talked up how good it was, and it's
good.
It's yeah. very surreal from the little
not,
bit I read.
She's not in it. He makes his own family basically, and they live in a house on a street, and they have a vision
it's like
dog
a suburbs, right? And they have two kids.
Yeah, 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 and it's just like, you know, and it's sort of almost. Twin Peaks esque because things go wrong.
It goes very
not everything is exactly as it seems to be.
It goes kind of disturbing and dark, right? Like
yes,
that's why right. I kind of did not keep going with it. I was like, I'm not sure this is what I'm looking for.
That's weird for a story where somebody just creates a family out of whole cloth and lives in a fantasy world.
Usually that works out really well.
Yeah. Well, remember
how could it possibly go wrong?
Remember the guy on the planet in Star Trek The Next Generation, just for my weekly reference.
Which episode?
The episode where the entire planet is destroyed yes. and he's got like a 1 square mile thing. He killed all of the Hoosnock. All of them. Everywhere.
But
that's
the,
not okay.
It's definitely not okay. That's a little bit genocide.
So a couple things I want to say about this is, one, I think the... there's a Easter egg in the poster where their silhouettes on the wall are their comics silhouettes, even though, cause they're shown as like 1950s, in garb, etc. And the silhouettes on the wall look like they're superhero alter egos.
Remember that episode one poster with,
yes,
young
the
Anakin.
Yeah. The best thing to ever come out of episode one. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Do you remember that? I think I have sort of like a theory based on the little I know about this comic run as to how this is going to work, right? Because the big question is, Vision's dead in the MCU continuity. So what's going on here? But I want to say more broadly that I think this is what I'm most excited about with the Disney Plus shows, because I do not think that there's any way to do this story as an MCU film. And the fact mm-hmm. that they can experiment and play around with different genres and different formats, I think is very exciting. I think it opens up like the staying power of the MCU. I think in some ways they've done a great job with all the movies being able to tell all these different stories and do different like takes on genres and stuff like that. But I think that the long-term success, like this is something that really gives a lot more life to it, is like you're not constrained to making a 2.5 hour spectacle movie that has to appeal to a huge audience and have these ingredients.
Right. I like it. I like that theory. Is it possible that it is sort of the Vision storyline, but flipped on its head and Wanda creates them all?
That's kind of where I was going.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Because, I mean, she does have the whole reality altering stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Seems useful.
And we haven't seen as much of her power. Like, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was in one movie.
Right. Yeah. They've really underpowered her in the movies, because if you gave her her comics powers, it would break everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah.
The movies would be over.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Alternatively, you can say that they taught her just not to do that because it's uncontrollable and wacky and you don't want to do that to people.
Right. Right.
So,
Well, I am interested in seeing where that goes. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I don't think it comes out till sometime next fall or something like that, but something to look for. Any other superhero sweep related things that we should be discussing? That was what was on my list. All right. Well, maybe we will jump over to the letters page then. I got two letters for us this week.
Oh, okay.
The first is from listener David Snyder. And he says, do you think the cancellation of Ghost Rider at Hulu is a bad sign for the future of non-Marvel Studios, non-Disney Plus Marvel shows? So there was a Ghost Rider show that was being developed at Hulu with Gabriel Luna. Is that the guy who played him on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
All right.
And that got canceled kind of abruptly a couple weeks back. To the surprise of everybody, I think, including Gabriel Luna. Yeah, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
I like him, and yet I had never even heard of this project. I mean, maybe I did, but it just went in one eye and out the other. Like
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, and I sort of have an antipathy towards Ghost Rider. I know a lot of people like him. I could, speaking of Nick Cage, Nicolas Cage, I can't really get super excited about Ghost Rider. As to the question, I don't know. I think there's a million reasons projects fail.
I had also heard that they were, that there's some machinations going on at Marvel, Disney, and they're maybe pushing Perlmutter to the side a little bit.
Hard to say. I mean, so they picked up two live action series. One was Ghost Rider. The second is Hellstrom. And I will say, just as we are recording this, I just saw some casting announcements for Hellstrom. So that's clearly moving forward. And then there are also Hulu obviously already has Runaways, which has been renewed for a third season. And then there's a bunch of animated shows that are coming out. I think we talked about, which includes like MODOK and Howard the Duck. Some super bizarre ones. And so this, you know, it does point to this future of a bizarre bifurcated situation, because my understanding is that stuff is all still ancillary to the MCU. And that's sort of the Marvel, you know, comics arm trying to, you know, push their weight around and essentially have stuff. But it's very different from the MCU stuff. And I think that's a challenge when they're going up against, you know, Disney, which is doing all of its own stuff. So I think long term, it's probably not great. I am surprised that this state of affairs has continued as long as it has. It seems to me that, you know, Disney would want to exert more control here. But, you know, this is where corporate governance and stuff comes in. And it gets complicated. But I think short term, basically, you're going to see a lot more. You're going to see all these Marvel Studio projects spool out. And I think it will just depend on how successful they are. But I don't think they're going to stop until something happens that makes them stop.
Like what? Asteroid strike? Or like
I was thinking something like they're, you know, they get absorbed into the Disney thing. Ike Perlmutter dies or gets fired or whatever. But like, you know, at some point, the status quo has to change. And I think that's the only thing that's actually going to make a difference in terms of this sort of weird forked situation we have.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is does it matter? Like, what is the what's the impact to the bottom line that these things are bifurcated?
No, it doesn't. You're totally right. Like, I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. exists in that weird limbo, and it's still a good show. You know, I watched some of Runaways, but not much. But I know people who liked it.
I liked it.
Yeah, so
I've watched both seasons so far. And I watched the first season of
Cloak and Dagger,
and I watched the first episode of the second season, and then for some reason I checked out.
Yeah, that's kind of how I went back to it. Felt after
and
watching.
It was fine. It was like it was still good, but I don't know. There was like, you know, it's one of those things where there's so much on, and for some reason it wasn't. Although I thought the first season was quite good, so maybe I should go back to it and see it again.
I think
I did the same thing. I watched the season then stopped. I've watched a bunch of Swamp Thing. and I don't know why. The creature effect's quite good. It's got an interesting horror vibe to it, from like the old more pulpy style magazines or comics of him. It's kind of cool. It just feels different. But I don't know. While I have a lot of, well, maybe not sympathies, the wrong word, while I understand that people would like all of these things to be in one big happy universe, A, that's really difficult to pull off in any kind of consistent way. You can tell that by trying to read any comic book ever, because none of them ever make any sense. Like, it's all intertwined in bananas. And B, if it's not impacting the bottom line, I don't see why the corporation would necessarily see this as a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that they think they might want to use those characters in a bigger way later.
Yeah, well, sure.
Which I wouldn't think they would care that much with Runaways and Cloak and Dagger, right. And maybe they're thinking that with Ghost Rider. I don't know.
I will say just to be clear, it looks like the choice not to proceed was with Hulu rather than with Marvel. So okay. There's some suggestion I'm reading that the series could be shopped elsewhere, but you know that would obviously be a hard sell potentially. So I don't think this was necessarily a Marvel decision of we want to use that character somewhere else. It was Hulu looking at it and going, yeah, we don't really want this show. And that could be any of a variety of reasons. Although it looks like, interestingly, the guy who, let me just double check this, the guy who was EPing it might have been the same guy who did The Punisher. Yeah, I recognize the name. But I want to say the thing that you said, John, that made me think about what the real issue here was, the whole like I started watching this and I just sort of checked out. And I think that's the bigger threat here is just there's too much stuff.
Right. And they may be getting more numbers like that, right? I mean, that may be happening across the board for those other two shows, and they may be going, okay, it probably doesn't make any sense to just throw a whole bunch of money into two more new shows when we're not getting the results that we want from the existing shows that we have.
Right.
Yeah, it's a diminishing returns at some point, right? Either you just start splitting the audience, or each new show only brings in X percent, and that's not enough to...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's like, are you going to watch Cloak and Dagger, which is good, or are you know, in a year, or are you going to watch these shows that are coming from Disney Plus that are going to be much higher production value and, you know, a lot more weight thrown into it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to watch The Mandalorian. Everybody's going to watch The Mandalorian. And while that is, guess what? Not a superhero. Close enough. And, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's not that people necessarily go out to watch superheroes and superheroes only. They just go out to have, like, a good rollicking action adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And if that can be supported by some other show, then fine. Why not? Would I rather watch some of these Disney Plus shows than... I don't know, Runaways or what was the other one with the I can't even remember the name. It was one of those X teams, but like kids. Oh. All of the episodes had X something in them.
Oh yeah,
that's see. There you go. Which one do you want to watch? I mean, I'm trying to prove my point by I'm not even.
Oh, you're thinking about The Gifted.
The Gifted.
Yeah. The Gifted. Yes.
Yeah.
Never watched any fine. Of it. I never watched any.
It was
of it.
Fine. It was okay.
I watched the first episode or two, and it was
It was just
okay though.
Yeah, they made a show. That's hard, you know. And I'm not even. That sounds like I'm trying to be mean. I'm not. It was competently made show. It just didn't really capture me, and there was so much else going on that. You know, what was the point?
Yeah. The big challenge for a lot of that too is that the MCU has really set a gold standard, I think, and it's possible to succeed in doing other types of things. But in some ways, people have come to expect a very specific kind of product, and shows that don't match that, for whatever reason, tend to fall a little bit flat. Like, I mean, I will say, I think the Netflix shows, for example, I watched all of those. I was thinking about that, like totaling up like number of episodes I watched. Like, God, I watched, you know, like 100 episodes of Netflix Marvel shows. They're definitely not MCU shows. Like, they don't have the same, but they were compelling in their own way. But not everything even hits that bar of like, I'm interested in watching this take on this series, and yeah, it's fine. It's not going to. Not everything is going to succeed, so that's probably fine.
Yeah, like this show.
Yeah, just like this show.
Not everything is going to succeed like this show, is what you mean, right?
That's, oh, right. Exactly, yes, I mean. Definitely. That's 100% what I meant. Yeah, my intonation was a little bit off. I need to work on my inflection.
Do we have time for one last letter?
Sure. Yeah, of course. Why not?
This comes from friend of the show and real Biff, James Farner.
Hey, James. It's in the mail, buddy. And he knows what I'm talking about.
Is it?
It's not actually, but today it will be. Like, I'm going to get on it right now. Yeah, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. James Farner, he's our official librarian.
That's true. Yes, so, indeed. Yeah.
And he counted up how many Biffs we were handing out to stuff.
It's an important service that many of our readers would like. Anyways, James asks, he said, this might be his biggest question of all time. How do or did you pitch superhero TV shows to your significant other or partner? And I guess my caveat would be, if you did. He mentions in parentheses he's thinking Batwoman specifically and CW shows in general.
Mm. Okay. So I just did that this morning, actually. I told my girlfriend that I had to watch Batwoman last night, and I had to take time during the middle of the day to talk about it with you guys. Like, sorry.
How'd that go?
I'm sorry, sweetie. I can't call you at lunch. I need to talk
to some idiots
with the boys. Yeah, yeah.
About a costumed crusader.
No, she actually, it turns out she listens to the show now, which she does not watch superhero shows.
We're very sorry.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I know, sweetheart. You're the best. You are crazy, but you are the best. I thought Batwoman was interesting to her because the character was queer, and I think that's a little bit interesting to a lot of people, like, because it opens up the space of what superheroes can be, which is sort of why I was harping on it a little bit earlier, is that it had clearly been on my mind today as I tried desperately to lunge around to explain to this poor lovely woman why I was wasting time talking about superheroes all the time. So, yeah, I think that worked, although I would have liked it if Batwoman had been more compelling and clear hit of a show. Previously, man, am I going to sound like a jerk here? Years and years ago, I convinced a different girlfriend to watch Arrow because, have you seen Stephen Amell do the Salmon Ladder?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. She got really into.
Definitely one of the reasons why my wife used to watch Arrow.
Yeah, yeah. She got really into Stephen Amell doing the Salmon Ladder, or like when he was climbing up the building to extract the bullet. She's like, "Man, I love this show." Like, yeah, but to be honest, me too. In a more serious way, I think. There's modern mythology and their archetypes of people, and they are larger than life representations of characters in larger than life situations. In a way, they are not too structurally different from, you know, like your medical drama of the week or your legal drama of the week, where everything is heightened and compressed and way over the top. But when done well, they underscore a part of the you know, emotional condition or the emotional reality for these characters, and maybe even a little bit about the human condition. But I don't know. I think the most that we got about the human condition in Arrow was when he skinned a man alive. Man, I was building up to that. I was building up to that. I know. God, I gotta get one in if you don't. Anyway,
you gotta get a Star Trek reference in.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, a bunch of jokes and some sort of a serious thing about it. Also, not everything's for everybody, which is, you know, like if you're dating Martin Scorsese, you know, maybe give him a pass.
Yeah. Karen used to watch, we used to watch Arrow, and then she started watching Flash. And then about that time, you know, like, and I think we got through the first season for sure of Flash together. And then she, you know, I think she checked out at the point where it's starting getting silly. And Arrow started out sort of gritty and serious and became much more superhero-y as it went on, and she kind of lost interest at that point, I think. But she watched most of the Marvel Netflix stuff, and that was a relatively easy pitch because I knew that they were going to get to Jessica Jones at some point, and was able to pitch that by saying Jessica Jones is a private investigator, yeah, and my wife is also a private investigator.
And your wife also has super strength, which is handy.
And she also has super strength. Yeah.
Your wife is incredible. Like, she's pretty amazing. Yeah, that was the best thing about Dan's wedding, actually, was meeting your wife.
When she lifted up a table.
Yeah, exactly. She just...
Yeah, that was our,
when the Nazis attacked, and she just threw them all over the place.
Yeah. It was our buffet, which was really awkward, but you know, it was fine. I love it.
Right. Well, yeah. Remember when Tony had lost his keys and his car was blocking somebody in, and she just picked up the car and moved it, and so that it could unblock the parking lot. That was pretty amazing.
That was pretty cool. For my part, I think actually my experience is pretty similar to John's. I think my wife did watch Arrow a little bit in the early seasons, like before we even started dating. But I think she had already kind of moved on by the time that we started dating. And she and I did watch the first season of The Flash together, and she really enjoyed it. And I think, it comes back to sort of what we were talking about with the Scorsese thing, like the different stuff is for different people. And she likes stuff that tend to be more light and fun. And so she's gone to pretty much all the MCU movies that have come out while we were together. And she really loves the Spider-Man movies with Tom Holland. And she really loves the Ant-Man movies because, like, she just likes stuff that's more fun and isn't as grim. Not as much of... I mean, MCU does a really good job with that, the stuff that's outside of it. She made noises about Legends. Once Legends, I told her like how much Legends improved, and she watched me like, I think she watched some of it like while we were on a plane while I was watching it. She would like with the sound off though. So she just kept glancing over. It was the one with the
Bollywood.
No, it was the Japanese one with the giant squid monster. She just kept looking over going like, what is happening? Like this looks bizarre. I'm like, it's really funny. Anyways, I think that's the kind of stuff that she enjoys. And so I think that's, I know when there's something that she's going to like that I can sort of nudge her into watching. And I think she has a kind of like a superhero quota sort of where it's like at a certain point, she's like, I need to watch other stuff, not just superhero stuff. Whereas I can clearly watch superhero stuff literally all day. And I think that's just a matter of like, I kind of pick my battles now where it's like, okay, this is a thing that she's really going to like. I'm actually going to convince her to watch this. And it's certainly easier to convince her to watch like a 2.5 hour movie than it is to commit to like a 13 or 26 episode run.
Yeah. I think the other thing, the unstated thing, is also, why don't you listen to what your partner wants to watch and sort of expand your stuff to watch some of that too.
Yep.
It's not a quid pro quo thing, which, guess what, we are discovering is not good. but politics jokes, man.
Latin is terrible. You know? Everyone agrees.
No, but like the... whatever. That's part of the fun of having a partner is you get to learn different stuff about each other. And that's cool that you want to share your comic book TV stuff with people. But, you know, don't forget to take on board new things, too.
Yep. Oh, there you go. We've solved this problem for you, James. I hope that helps in some small way.
Yeah.
Have you considered developing an addiction to puffs?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You really hung me out to dry with that puff thing, John. Like, as soon as Dan came back, you just abandoned me.
Probably for the best.
I think he may be right.
Yeah. I know he's right, but I mean, I'm stubborn. These are two different things.
All right. Well, we are going to wrap up this week's show. but we will return next week. And we'll see about where and when we're returning next week, because our coverage of Arrow should be kicking off pretty shortly. But until then, I would like to thank my colleagues. Guy English, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot. That was a lot of fun.
John Maltz, always a pleasure.
Did we not get a Star Trek reference in this time?
Yeah, he talked about the whole planet.
Yeah, we did. We talked about that Kevin, the Hoosnock.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay, never mind.
Jeez.
I love that you've taken on my mission, though, John. I love it.
It's a five-year mission.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's an ongoing mission.
I am out. That is all we have time for. Thank you all for reading along with us. We appreciate your support in making this show and the fact that you tune in every week to listen to us ramble about superhero stuff. It's great. We love it. So thank you for reading along with us, and we will see you next week.
Hey, John, pass me one of those puffs.
Sure. Here you go.
Thanks, man. Let's call it a night.
No Foley work. I draw the line.
Tripping balls.